Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is Future Priest Adiah Hawkins. I'd like to serve you forever as a priest starting very soon. It's now time to start finding your seats for Sabbath services.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. My name is Future Priest Nebiah Hawkins, and I'd like to serve you forever as a priest starting very soon. It's a privilege and honor to present to you the Future Priest and Priestess now entering the sanctuary. It's a privilege and honor to present to you our first speaker, Future Priest Yeshaya Hawkins. Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace of Yah be with each and every one of you. Today I'm going to show you the curses that come from celebrating Valentine's Day. To the world, Valentine's Day is a day that promotes love, but I'm going to show you that it really promotes the spread unlawful lust and the spreading of STDs. The Catholic Church changed this worship of the Queen of Heaven to the worship of a dead saint, Saint Valentine, and said it is a day to celebrate love. But instead of promoting Yahweh's laws of true love, it is another day for the merchants to get rich on selling empty heart-shaped symbols. The heart shape was created by Yahweh inside every black walnut. This is a heart-shaped nut. This is what it looks like. Can everyone see that? The demon stole the shape and used it to represent somebody who has been struck by the god Cupid's arrow in the heart and has fallen in love with another person. Kindergartners are made to give VD cards or Valentine's Day cards, or as I like to call them, venereal disease cards, to all their classmates. It is one of the best business days out of the whole year. Now I'm going to show you a video made by the HCI on Valentine's Day. May I have my video?
But what is the real meaning of this day known as St. Valentine's Day? Centuries before the birth of Yeshua Messiah, the Romans were celebrating the evening of February 14th and the day of February 15th as an idolatrous and sensuous festival named Lupercalia. In honor of the god of fertility, Lupercus, the god of the woodlands and pastures. And many of the customs of Valentine's Day are from pagan times, but the name is Christian. In ancient Rome, when wolves were a great menace, there was a god named Lupercus, corresponding to the Grecian half-human, half-goat god named Pan, who kept the wolves away from the Roman towns and villages. So in his honor, there was a festival called Lupercalia, celebrated every 15th of February, at which time young people drew lots for game partners for the year. When the vast crowds of participants gathered to celebrate this festival, the priests of Lupercus would dress themselves in goatskins and run through the crowds, striking the ones they encountered with goatskin thongs. This was believed to ensure fertility and an easy delivery at childbirth. Later, a priest in Rome, whose name was Valentine, was killed around 270 AD, canonized, and made a saint of the church. His feast day was established on the 14th of February, and the combination of the 2 days of February 14th and 15th became one and the same as celebrated in the church. When Christianity became prevalent, the priests wanted their converts to give up former heathen practices. Therefore, the officials Christianized the ancient pagan celebration and called the feast day of Lupercalia St. Valentine's Day. And today, we see these same fertility rites that the ancients worshipped is still active in the lives of the people today. Could the celebration of this day contribute to the increasing rise of STDs? Birth defects will affect about one in every 33 babies born in the United States this year, and not to mention the inhuman fact that more than 42 million babies will become aborted statistics this year. That's 115,000 murders a day. In 494 AD, Bishop Galatius replaced the Lupercalia with the Feast of the Purification of the Virgin, held on the same day. Is it any wonder why this day is now so well known and celebrated? In whose honor is this day really held.
So who are you really worshiping? Did you know that STDs used to be called venereal diseases, or venereal disease, or VD for short? Now let's turn over to Isaiah 14, verse 12, on page 538. Isaiah 14, verse 12. And it says, "How you have fallen from heaven, Hillel, Lucifer, oh Hillel, Lucifer, Aphrodite, Venus, child of delight, how you are cut down, you to the ground, you who weaken the nations." That word Venus is where they got the word venereal from, like in venereal disease. Get that last part where it said, "you who weaken the nations." She weakened the people's immune systems with the STDs, chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, just to name a few. The CDC estimates that nearly 20 million new STDs occur every year in the U.S. alone, half among young people ages 15 to 24. So if we don't want to become part of these statistics, we need to do what it tells us in 1 Yochanan chapter 5, verse 2 through 3, on page 966. 1 Yochanan chapter 5, verses 2 through 3. And it says, "By this we know that we love the children of Yah, when we love Yah by keeping his laws. For this is the love of Yah, that we keep his law, and his law is not grievous. This, brethren, is true love, that will bring blessings and not curses." And with this, I'll turn it over to future priest Buffalo Bill Hawkins for prayer.
Future priest, the great deacon, Melchizedek.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Today I'd like to speak on the subject of Yahweh is the potter and we are the clay. And Yahweh is molding and shaping us in the way that he wants us to be. Because Yahweh knows what he's doing with us. Just like a potter, Yahweh is trying to make us in perfect unity with his laws. If we could all turn over to Genesis 1, it's verse 26. And it says, "Then Yahweh said, I will make man in my image and according to my likeness. And they will have rulership over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." Now that word rulership in Genesis 1 verse 26 is authority. So Yahweh wants to make us in his image and his likeness. Now image in the Webster's New World Dictionary volume 2 means a representation or symbol of an object. A representation of a person or thing. A statue or an image produced by a mirror, a likeness. And it also means similar to the form or shape of something that is like another. For example, a copy. And then the word like, if we could all turn over to Yaakov 1. It's Yaakov 1, verse 23 through 25. And it says, "For if anyone is a hearer of the law and is not a doer, it's like a man looking at his natural features in a mirror. For he looks at himself, then he goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. But he who looks into the perfect law of liberty and preserves, continues persistently in it, is not a forgetful hearer, but he's a doer of the work, and that man will be blessed in all performance of the law." And so Yahweh is not physically sitting there squashing us or turning our head a little or pinching us, but he's using if we could all turn over to Isaiah 64. Isaiah 64. And it's verse 8. And it says, "But now, O Yahweh, you are our father, and we are the clay, and you are our potter. and we all are the works of your hands. So like I was saying before, how Yahweh isn't physically sitting there pinching us or squashing us, but the word there, it says hand, and that means his authority. So he's using his authorities that he sends us, like the priest. And so whenever we buck up against the priest, we're saying to Yahweh, I don't want to look like you, Yahweh. I want to look like Satan. That's what we're telling Yahweh whenever we buck up against our authorities. And we're saying that I want to be like the evil of the gods. Now, have you ever seen a potter working with clay? I have a short video if you could play it. Okay. So that was a video of a person working with clay. And if we could all turn over to Isaiah 45, and it's verse 9. It's found on page 559. And it says, woe to him who strives with his maker. Let the potsherer strive with the potsherer of the earth. Will the clay say to him who forms it, what are you making? Or will the handiworker say, he has no hands? So in that video, did you see the clay jump off the wheel and tell the potter, I don't want to look like this, I want to look like that? No, he didn't. But this is what we're doing whenever we buck up against the priests or authorities and we rebel. But Yahweh is molding and shaping us at this time, just like the person did with the clay. If we could turn over to Romans. Romans 9. And it's verse 20. It's found on page 880. Romans 9, verse 20. And it says, but who are you, O man, to criticize Yahweh? Should that which is created say to him who created it, why did you make me this way? Does not the potter have power over the clay of the same lump? Okay, so you can see how in that video how they mold and shape different things with clay. They make pots and plates and cups and things like that and so on. But in conclusion, I would like to say we have to be like Yahweh. And we have to tell Yahweh that we want to look like Yahweh. We want to be in the image and likeness of Yahweh, not like Satan. Like Yahshua did in Matthew 4, he said, get away from me, Satan. And that's what we need to do at this time. And with that, everyone please stand. And I'll turn it over to the next speaker, the great Deacon David.
Shabbat shalom, saints of Yahweh. Please be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. I wanted to tell you something. I went out in the parking lot last night after confession, and the radio was on. And I heard Pastor. He was talking about microbes and how they operate in our body, of course, and I'm going to kind of shorten it a little bit, but talking about the signals that they get, the instruction that the microbes get as they're going throughout our body, and, you know, there's more vitamin K needed over here, and there's more serotonin needed over here, and this type of thing. And if these microbes are all doing their job and following the instruction that they have, everything works out great. But then he talked about the confusion that comes. You know, one of these microbes gets over there and does its own thing because it's confused because it's sick. It didn't make up its mind to do that, but it's sick because of the things that have been ingested into the body, the STDs, the unclean things that have entered in. And so the instruction goes off to the side, and the microbes go in places that they shouldn't go, and then it creates chaos in the body. And I was thinking about how it is with us. You know, that's pretty much how it is here, the body of Messiah, right? And what occurs is, well, let me not jump ahead, but okay, let me read this to you real quick. Knowledge is acquaintance with facts, truths, and principles. So let's talk a little bit on how to get that, okay? And please, you know, pay attention. Write some of this stuff down. I'm going to go really slow. This is for everybody. It's whether you're new, whether you're old, it doesn't matter. It's for all of us. So we start out when we come to the house of Yahweh, or when we hear about Yahweh, we start praying for wisdom, knowledge, and spirit holy. You know, we're praying constantly for this knowledge to come, and what do we have to do? Well, let's turn over to Proverbs 2:3. I think that's Proverbs 2:3, page 497. Yes, if you will cry for knowledge, right there, if you will cry for knowledge, that's insight, and cry aloud for understanding. You know, if you seek with her wisdom as you would for silver and search for her as you would for hidden treasure, then you will understand the reverence of Yahweh and find the knowledge of our Heavenly Father. You'll find that knowledge. So you cry aloud, you seek, then you will understand that reverence of Yahweh and the keeping of His laws and understand what it's all about. In Proverbs 1, just across the page, it says, Proverbs, you know, for attaining education in wisdom and moral discipline, to comprehend words of understanding. So you're just not going to understand them automatically. In fact, in Psalms, I think it's verse 111, chapter 111, verse 10, where it says, great understanding have those that keep the laws of Yahweh. Well, where does that leave the ones that don't keep the laws? They don't have any understanding, right? So this is for attaining education and wisdom, moral discipline, to comprehend words of understanding. For acquiring training, and remember the word training, in discernment of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity. To give subtlety, to sharpen the wits, teach discernment and common sense to the simple, untutored and ignorant, to give knowledge and discretion to the youth. The wise, an educated scholar, also may hear. So this is for all of us that know a little bit about it already, but, you know, we don't know it all, right? It may increase his store of knowledge, and a man of understanding may receive sound guidance. So we want to increase our store of knowledge. So we start trying to keep the Sabbath. You know, we read a little bit in the scriptures. We're crying out for knowledge. You know, we're being called. And so we start trying to keep the Sabbath. We learn about Yahweh's name. We read some booklets. What's the next step? Well, we make a call to the house of Yahweh, right? We write in or we call or something. And so then some instruction comes. And everybody's been through this before, everybody here. So this instruction comes and we're told to, you know, come to the feast, right? Come to the feast. Turn to Deuteronomy 12:5 on page 157. Deuteronomy 12:5 on page 157 says, "But you are to seek the habitation of your father, the house of Yahweh, the place which Yahweh your father shall choose out of all your tribes to establish his name, and there you must go to qualify for a position." In verse 7, "There in front of Yahweh your father, you and your family shall eat, and you shall rejoice in all that you are assigned to do." In all that you are assigned to do, and Yahweh your Father has blessed you. You must not at all do as we're doing here this day, every man doing whatever is right in his own eyes. So there we have it. We've been given an instruction, and it's like, go where? Abilene, Texas? Well, what does that have to do with anything? So we start learning, but we follow the instruction. You know, if you don't come, if you get that instruction and you don't come, guess what? Does the knowledge continue to increase? No, the knowledge stops. I mean, yeah, you can watch the sermons and everything and gain a little bit to get you to that point of coming to the house of Yahweh. But when you come to the house of Yahweh, when you obey that law, when you come here to the feast, that's when you start gaining real knowledge. You come to qualify for that job and knowledge increases. So now you made it here, right? You're here. Now what? What do we do now? I'm here. I've made it to the house of Yahweh. So are we supposed to sit and read and eat barbecue all day? Is that what we do? Do we go preach in the parking lot or something? You know, maybe we're a landscaper and we see a few trees that look like they could be trimmed, so we break out our tools and start trimming trees without asking anybody. You know, you can't just do whatever it is that you want to do. That's the hard way. That's where you're going to have frustration, anger, embarrassment. All these things are going to build. It's a lot quicker and easier if you follow instruction, right? So let's look at that. In verse 7, remember it says, "There in front of Yahweh your Father, you and your family shall eat and shall rejoice in all that you are assigned to do." Well, how do you get that assignment? How are you assigned? Well, okay, here's some more instruction coming your way now. Turn to Deuteronomy 17:9 on page 161. On page 161, just a few pages over, 17:9, it says, "Go to the priests, ask for their decision." They're going to tell you what to do. You go to the priest, you make your request known, you wonder, you know, what can I do? And you're going to be told what to do. Now, so what do we do from there? Do we turn to the left? Do we turn to the right? If you continue reading there, it says, "You must act according to the sentence they pronounce for you at the place Yahweh chooses, and be careful to do all that they order you to do. According to the law they teach you, you shall do. And according to the decisions they give you, you shall do. And you must not turn aside to the right hand nor to the left hand from the sentence given." And that's the decision. That's what it's whatever you've been told to do in answer to the question that you've asked. It's not whatever you want to do. So are we going to turn to the left? Are we going to turn to the right, or are we going to follow instructions? So here you go, you're all ready to go to work, you've been assigned something, or to go talk to a supervisor and all. And now about this time, here comes this virus. I mean, here comes, you know, a person. This person that is telling you, you know, giving you wrong info. Kind of like in Genesis 3, you know, when Eve had instructions on what to do, and Eve was given some wrong info. What did it say? You know, did Yahweh really say that? No, you don't have to worry about that. You can go do this over here. Or no, you don't need to go talk to him. Why don't you come and let me take you over here? I know this supervisor over here. You can come talk to him and see about getting on that job. So this virus comes, and it gives way to confusion, causing this confusion in our minds just like it causes in our bodies, right? In fact, you as an individual may be at that time thinking, you know, what do I do? Where do I go? Do I go with him? Do I go over here? Do I do what I was told to do? What should I do? And that's where the pressure comes in, and that's where the test is. And you know, Yahweh's going to see what you do at that time. But it causes the chaos in the body, just like in the body of Messiah, the chaos that's caused in the work when something like that occurs. Well, you can start today. You know, you can start today in changing that way of conduct in your life if there's any of it there. You know, you can follow the instruction and you'll be blessed on the performance of whatever you've been assigned to do. But if you don't follow the instruction, guess what? It's kind of like, well, you know, let's do it again. You get to go through it again. So what do? You go to the priest, you repent. You confess, and then they're going to give you instruction on what to do once again, right? And so here we go. We're either going to follow that instruction or we're not going to follow the instruction. And it's our choice at that time to obey or not. And so if we obey, we'll be blessed. If we don't obey, what occurs? Well, here we go again. You know, you get to do it over and over and over again until you get it right. It's kind of like dealing with bullying. You know, in learning how to respond to bullying, until you learn how to respond to bullying, it's going to keep coming at you more and more and more. And yeah, there's some instances where someone may jump up and do something about it. But if you're in a situation where the bullies are at and you're being bullied, then until you learn to respond to it, it's going to keep on coming at you. Once you learn how to respond to it, within a short time, that bullying can go away. And you probably won't have to deal with it again. Or if you do, you really won't even notice it because it'll be something you do automatically. You know, so if you're somebody that, you know, maybe you got some information or maybe you are pretty well versed in a particular type of job. You know, maybe you're a mechanic. Maybe you're a window washer. Maybe you're a cook, whatever the case may be. And you think that you've got some information, or you want to go do this job instead of this job. Maybe you've been put over at the dairy milking cows, and you're like, "What am I doing this for? They need a cook over here. They need a, you know." And you're thinking all this, and you want to go do this job, and so you want to talk to somebody about it. Well, what do? You go to the priest. Go to your supervisor. Go to the priest. Find out what you should do about that situation, and then what do? You follow the instructions. If you don't follow the instructions, whatever it is that you're wanting to occur is really never going to come about for you. And guess what? You're going to get to do what you're doing over and over and over again until you show that you can do that. It's not about so much, yeah, we want to get the job done and everything, but what we're learning, what Yahweh's teaching us here is how to get along with people, how to do the work, how to follow instructions. And so we want to do what we're assigned to do with all our might. And so looking at what we've covered so far, it's knowledge. Okay, knowledge is acquaintance with facts, truths, and principles. So acquaintance with understanding Yahweh's laws, the facts, truths, and principles. Now instruction. You know, now you can start following instruction today. If you haven't been, you can start today, okay? Instruct means to prepare. So get this. Write this down. Instruct means to prepare. So the person instructing us is preparing us for something, right? And it made me think about the future priest when he just got through with the video and his sermon about the potter and being molded and how Israel Hawkins, how pastor is shaping us, you know, to fit the mold, you know, to get into the kingdom. And so this instructing is to prepare for something. And the instruction is the act of instructing. But it's imparting knowledge. You get that? So, you know, what does instruction, following instruction, have to do with knowledge anyway? It has everything to do with knowledge. If you want to, and you're praying and crying aloud for wisdom, knowledge, and understanding, and Spirit holy, then you will have to follow instructions before any of that comes your way. We must all learn how to follow the instructions that are given to us, so that we can gain that knowledge. It's amazing the knowledge that's passed up, that an individual passes up when they don't follow instructions. And it doesn't matter if you've been, you know, a widget adjuster for 50 years. If your supervisor comes to you and tells you that you need to adjust the widget this way and you've been doing it for 50 years another way, you need to do it the way the supervisor says so that you can gain knowledge. He's preparing you to gain this knowledge so that he can impart knowledge to you and you can gain this great knowledge of Yahweh. So by following instruction, we gain these things. And if we don't, guess what? It causes the confusion again in the body of Messiah. It causes the confusion and chaos, you know, until we get it right. It's kind of like a computer giving and processing bits of information at a time until the understanding is complete. You know, isn't that beautiful? I mean, it's like a computer, bits at a time, and it's like us, bits at a time, coming our way. So, now if we're giving the instruction, we want to be like Yahshua, the way he gave instruction. Not criticizing, not condemning, but encouraging and finding a way to teach. Finding a way to teach and impart this knowledge for the one being taught that they can understand. And we all have some authority over us. We all get the opportunity to have instruction given to us. And we're either going to buck up and rebel at the instruction or we're going to politely accept the instruction, no matter how the instruction is delivered. Yahweh's looking at us. You know, everything that comes our way is for our benefit. You understand? Understanding, knowledge, right? Okay, so also supervisors, be aware when we're doing this that we must also do what we're assigned to do. If you're a supervisor, and everybody does supervise different areas in some way or another, but do what you're assigned to do with all your might. You know, not going and getting involved in things that may be not your, you know, your deal. You know, maybe you're a supervisor of the parking lot out here and the mechanic is out here working on something and you know, we got cars to park over here, but you're over there telling the mechanic how to do his job or telling somebody, hey, get under there and do this. You know, well, you can't do that. Don't get involved in other things because what does it do? It creates confusion in the mind of the one being instructed. You know, it goes back to, well, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to do that? Am I supposed to do what he told me to do? Oh, this Kahan told me to come do this. I guess I could go and do that for a minute and get back to what I was doing here in a minute. No, that's not how it goes. You need to do what you were assigned to do with all your might, and that's what brings the knowledge. So we have to be careful not to pass that confusion on and cause this. And All it takes is a request. You could go to the supervisor. If you need something, all you got to do is go to that person's supervisor. And then if they're available to help you, then they will. And if they're not available, well, they won't. So we need to all of us take care of doing what we're assigned to do with all our might. And we will be vessels prepared to receive understanding and knowledge by following this instruction. And, you know, it goes back to the two most important things that Yeshua said. When asked, he said, what's the most important commandments in the law? You know, and he said, well, love Yahweh with all your heart, soul, and might, right? And then love your neighbor as yourself. That's being in unity with your neighbor, if your neighbor is, of course, keeping the laws of Yahweh. And walking together humbly, you know, being humble, being willing to accept instruction, because the instruction that's coming your way, it's more than just being told what to do. It's if you're being told what to do, if you're being given instruction by a person that's authorized to give you instruction, and you follow that instruction, you're loving Yahweh with all your heart, soul, and might. If you go out and do that job with all your might, the job you're assigned to do, and you're loving your neighbor as yourself. And you are gaining great wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. And now, if you'll all please stand. It's my great honor and privilege to present to you the great Kohen Ilya.
Shabbat shalom, everyone. You may all be seated. Be turning over to Proverbs chapter 3. Proverbs chapter 3, as a great deacon just brought, we are actually commanded by Yahweh to search out wisdom, to cry aloud for this knowledge and understanding. And Yahweh doesn't say we should act contemptuously when we receive it, but we should cry aloud and beg for it. Now, if you look over to Proverbs chapter 3, starting off with verse 13, it's found on page 497. It says, blessed is the man who finds wisdom. Blessed is the man who gains understanding. Look over to side note M. Finds wisdom. It says, who finds the house of Yahweh. To get wisdom, to have wisdom, to even begin to inquire of wisdom, you must search out the place Yahweh has chosen to establish His name, and there we must go. We must come, and when we get to that place, we are to ask, what is it that I must do? As Deuteronomy 17:9 says. What is it that I must do? And turn over quickly to Deuteronomy 17. Deuteronomy 17. As we ask, what is it that I must do? Looking at verse 10, 17 verse 10, it says, you must act according to the sentence, to the counsel, to the instruction, to the advice that they pronounce for you at the place Yahweh shall choose. Be careful to do all they order you to do. Be careful to take all of these instructions that you're given from this place of wisdom, this house of wisdom. Be very careful to follow those instructions. When you go to a place of wisdom and you ask, what is it must I do? And you follow those instructions, you're giving understanding. That understanding is the instructions. And when you take the wisdom and you couple understanding with that wisdom, then you have knowledge. Then you have knowledge. The knowledge has come to you, the knowledge of Yahweh. But remember, it can only come from the place Yahweh chose to establish His name. And there you must go, because that's where the one sent is. That's where I sent Him, to establish my work. And He's teaching teachers. And those teachers He's trained are going to teach more teachers. But you have to go ask at Abel of Abel. Do not forget to find the one sent. Search Him out. He'll be at the place I chose to establish my name. He will establish that place, actually. But look down to verse 11. It says, according to the law they teach you, they instruct you, they guide you, you shall do according to the decision they give you. You shall do. You must not turn aside to the right hand nor to the left hand from the sentence they pronounce for you, from this instructions they give to you. Be very careful to do everything they told you to do. Think of sprinkling with ashes of the red heifer if we were not very careful to do everything we were told to do and we decide to do it our own way. Does it have the same effect if you do it wrong? No, it doesn't. You can take things such as olive oil and you can cook it. Honey, you can cook it. Is it beneficial once you do that? The extra virgin olive oil anywhere, or the honey? No, it actually starts rotting the gut. But where did we learn these things from? From the one sent, from the one who come and instructed us. Now, he's receiving these instructions from our high priest. And look back to verse 11. You can see Yahshua clearly said, when verse 11 says, you must not go to the right hand nor to the left hand, Yahshua said, straight is the gate and narrow is the way, and there are few who find it. Many come, but three out of four will fall away. Three out of four will fall away. Look over to back to Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 1. And we're going to pick up in verse 7. It says, the reverence of Yahweh is the beginning, first requirement, chief part of knowledge, wisdom. Only fools, morally perverse, turning from what is right, despise wisdom and instruction. They despise the house of Yahweh, and they despise the ones who give the instruction. Only a fool would do such a thing. And that's why Yahshua Messiah turned to the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Essenes, and the Herodians, and said, oh, fools and slow of heart, to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Yahshua taught character education. He taught morality. In fact, Yahshua Messiah, there's so much you find in the peaceful solution that comes from what Yahshua said and how he said it. The word reverence, defined in the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, it says a feeling of profound awe and respect and often love. It shows respect. And in showing respect, especially in the form of a bow. In the form of a bow. Now, Yahweh commanded us to come and reverence his house. Turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6. We're not asked to show respect if we feel we're being respected. No, we're commanded. You go to the place that I've chosen to establish my name. Once you get there, you ask of them, what is it that I must do? And Yahweh says, I will make a covenant with you. You come to the place that I choose, and you ask of them what it is that you are to do, I'll make a covenant with you. We'll make an agreement. And if you follow what I say, I'll change your heart and mind. I will remove all uncleanness from you, and you will be a special treasure to me. But look down, let's start off with Deuteronomy 6:1. It said, now these are the laws, the statutes, and the judgments which Yahweh your Father has commanded me. Notice, commanded me to teach you. Pastor is under that same instruction these last days. He is commanded by Yahweh to teach us, so that you may observe them in the land you are crossing over to possess. Notice verse 2, so that you may reverence Yahweh your Father by keeping all of his statutes, his laws, which I command you, your sons and your sons' sons, all the days of your life, so that your days may be prolonged. Notice, so that you may reverence Yahweh, so that you may respect Yahweh, so that you will love Yahweh with an unconditional love. And to show love to Yahweh, remember, it's not an outward thing. It's not a personality kind of thing. It's a character thing. It's what's inside of us. And we show that through our actions. And we'll get to that. But Yahweh commands us to go to that place and show respect. To do anything less than to show respect is to serve the gods. Yahweh tells us in Exodus that we are not to bow down to them nor serve them. Do not respect them. Do not show respect to them. Do not honor them in any way, shape, or form. To reject the priests, to reject Yahweh's house, to reject Yahweh's anointed one and the instructions that are given to us, we serve the gods. And it can be very easily done. Disrespecting one another, not loving our neighbors, ourselves, not laying down our very lives for the work of Yahweh shows disrespect to Yahweh. It shows disrespect to Yahweh's anointed. It shows disrespect to ourselves. We actually don't even have the respect that's required for us. Look back over to Genesis chapter 4. You know, influence is a very powerful thing. And sometimes we convince ourselves that we can be part of the house of Yahweh. We can go keep our appointments on the Sabbath day. And the things in this world, they're not going to pull me away. I know the difference between right and wrong. You know, a little bit of music won't hurt. A couple movies won't hurt. I know the difference. I can sit there and tell you what they're doing wrong. If it's that small of a thing, why did Yahweh make it an example? The very first part of the book of Yahweh, he showed us how powerful an influence can be. Then how can we consider it a weak thing? Genesis 6, or 4 verse 6, it says, "So Yahweh said to Cain, 'Why are you angry? Why are you downcast? Cain, why are you so emotional? Why are you so upset? Didn't I give you instructions? Were you not told what to do and how to do it? Did I not teach you the right and proper way to conduct yourself in the house of Yahweh?'" Verse 7, "If you do righteousness, if you will choose to keep and observe all of these laws, statutes, and judgments, if you'll follow these instructions that I give you, will you not be accepted? Will I not bring you in? Will you not be a special treasure to me? And if you do not do righteousness, if you do not follow these instructions, if you turn to the left hand or to the right hand, if you do anything other than what I've instructed you to do, if you go outside of that, sin is crouching at your door. Sin is in your mind. It's in your mind to sin. It's already started to develop, and now it's maturing. The desire to sin is within you, but you must overcome it." Each and every one of us came to the house of Yahweh with sin in us. We were taught by a system, generations of choices, negative choices, things that pollute the mind, contaminate the mind, were put within every one of us as we came. We have generations of children here. We look at the children in the house of Yahweh today. And are they perfect? No, they're not perfect, but they're a lot better off than what we were when we were their age. Absolutely. We need to keep that in mind when dealing with the children of the house of Yahweh. Our job is to be trained so we can train them. And you need to train them well, because they'll train your children eventually. And then their children will train their children. And it's going to continually go. If we fail, we're only cheating the generations after us. We're not doing what was required of us to do. Look over to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians. When we sit with our children, when we walk with our children and talk with our children, we should be giving them instructions. We should be talking about Yahweh's laws. 1 Corinthians chapter 28 and verse 9, found on page 350. King David was a man after Yahweh's own heart. He desired to have the character of Yahweh. King David fell many times, but he picked himself back up. What instructions? This is King David's instructions to Solomon. 28 and verse 9. "And if you, Solomon, my son, and you, Solomon, my son, know the father of your father and serve him with a perfect heart and a willing mind." Notice, with a perfect heart and a willing mind. That's what the peaceful solution is doing in these last days. It's helping to change the hearts and minds. 1 Chronicles chapter 28, 1 Chronicles 28, found on page 350 and verse 9. Once again, "And if you, Solomon, my son, know the father of your fathers and serve him with a perfect heart and a willing mind," notice, Yahweh searches all hearts and understands the imaginations coming from the mind. "If you seek him, he will be found by you." If you seek out this place, he will be found by you. "But if you forsake him, he will cast you off forever." That same thing is being told to us in these last days that have received our calling. We've been called here and our opportunity is at hand. We cry aloud for this knowledge. And we need to understand, when we cry to Yahweh for knowledge, when we cry to him for wisdom, we're praying, "Yahweh, please allow the seventh Malach to give me instructions. Please allow someone to tell me what to do." The thing that's important that we need to make sure we never lay off on is we need to pray for understanding. "Please allow my heart to never harden so I reject the things that I've been given." Remember what Hosea said in Hosea 4:6. You can write that down for your notes. It said, "My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. For a lack of following instructions, my people are destroyed." And that's a very serious thing. Yahweh doesn't take it lightly. Instructions are needed. They're a must. Look across your page to page 351 in 1 Chronicles chapter 29 and verse 17. It says, "I know also, my father, that you test the hearts, and you have pleasure in uprightness. In the uprightness of my heart, I have willingly offered all these things. And now with joy I have seen your people who are present here, offering willingly to you. Yahweh finds great pleasure in this richness that is found in Yahweh's house, and it's not measured in monetary by any means. The richness that the seventh Malach has accumulated in these last days is a treasure worth more than gold, fine gold. Praise Yahweh. Remember in Exodus 20, verse 20, that Yahweh said that Moshe, tell the children of Israel, I brought them out. I brought them out to allow them to be tested, to try them. We want to see who they're going to serve, as Yahshua told the children of Israel. Choose this day whom you will serve. Choose this day whom you will serve. Well, Yahshua Messiah, he spoke very clearly to not only his disciples, but also to the Pharisees and the Sadducees, the Essenes and Herodians. Look over to Matithiah chapter 23. Matithiah chapter 23. And remember what we teach. What is the first thing that you're educated on about character in the peaceful solution? It's the same reason the front of the book has a blurry picture. The picture is blurry because you can't really see the character of a person at first glance. You can get their personality or some parts of it, but you cannot see the character. You can't see the character of someone. 23 and verse 1, it says, Then Yahshua spoke to the multitude and to his disciples, saying, The scribes and the Pharisees are appointed to Moshe's office. They've been appointed teachers. Therefore, obey and practice everything they tell you to observe, but do not imitate their works, for they preach, but they do not practice. They become hypocrites. They tell you what to do, but they don't do it themselves. Each one of us in these last days were called out to be teachers. If we do not study to show ourselves approved, as shown in 2 Timothy 2:15, we will be workers ashamed of what we were called to do. We will fall short. We will become no better than those who were chosen through bloodline and did not show to prove themselves. If we do not study to show ourselves approved. If we don't seek to cleanse our hearts and minds. Look over to verse 27. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed sepulchers, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead man's bones and all uncleanness. Look back up to verse 26. You blind Pharisees, no, you can't see the way of Yahweh doing this. You're a servant to whom you obey. Yahshua said, First cleanse the inside of the cup and plate, so that the outside of them may be clean also. Yahweh tells us to get our character straight. Have your character in a positive form. Everything else will work itself out. But if we don't fix what's on the inside, we'll never correct what's on the outside. The outside becomes an open show for people to see. Turn over to 1 Samuel, I think it is. 1 Samuel 16. I'll read it to you very quickly. 1 Samuel 16, verse 7. Remember when Samuel came to choose a king, to anoint a king to replace Saul, and the spirit of Yahweh was no longer with Saul? The character of Yahweh was no longer with Saul. Sin had been found within him, negative character. He held on to it. Well, remember what Yahweh told Samuel? It says, But Yahweh said to Samuel, Do not look at his appearance or his height, because I have refused him. Yahweh does not see things as a man sees them. For man looks at the outward appearance, but Yahweh looks at the heart, the seat of the intelligence. Yahweh truly looks to see what a man's character is. Yahweh doesn't look to see what kind of car he drives or how he combs his hair or how she combs her hair, how they wear their dress. Yahweh seeks to see what's on the inside of the cup. Yahweh seeks to follow, to make teachers, to make leaders of those who cleanse the inside of the cup. But remember, there's another cup spoken of in scriptures. Look over to Revelation 17. Our cup will either be filled with one or the other, with righteousness or with sin. If we don't choose to cleanse ourselves through the teachings, through the instructions of what we're giving, then our cup will become just like the cup spoken of in Revelation 17 and verse 4. It says, And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with gold and precious stone. and pearls having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornications. The character, remember, of this person was a beast, represented a beastly system, seeking to devour whoever she may. If we do not cleanse ourselves, if we don't come out from among her, as we're told in Revelation 18:4 and 2 Corinthians 6:17, if we don't come out from among her and be separate, notice, separate ourselves, cleanse ourselves, we cannot have part of what Yahweh is offering in these last days. We shall have no part. We will not be a special treasure. We will be, as this latest prophetic word shows very clearly, we will be an abomination. We become a dishonor to Yahweh. Speaking of 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 17, turn over there, found on page 904. 2 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 17. It goes right along with Revelation 18:4, but it says, "Therefore, come out from among them and be separate, says Yahweh. Do not touch the unclean thing, and I will receive you." Well, there's uncleanness all around us in this world today, and we're commanded to come out of that way, to not partake of their sins, to not have that lifestyle. Don't do what you see them doing here this day. We cannot do what is right in our own eyes. We must be separate from that. In verse 18, it says, "I will be a father to you, and you will be my sons and daughters," says Yahweh Almighty. But there's an agreement that has to come forth. To make this agreement with me, to get this covenant, you have to cleanse your heart and mind. You have to cleanse that. Look over to Jacob. Jacob chapter 4. Jacob chapter 4, found on page 954, in verse 7. It says, "Therefore," Jacob chapter 4 and verse 7, "therefore submit yourselves to Yahweh." Now there we go. We're right back at go out, go find the place Yahweh chose to establish his name. Ask what it is you must do, and then be very careful to do what they tell you to do. That's what it means to submit. "Resist the devil, and she will flee from you." Resist what this world is offering. Resist this way of life, and it will leave you. But you have to resist it. You cannot partake of both of them. You can't have both trees. You have to have one and serve that one, or else you serve the other and you become an owner to that one, as Romans says. You're a servant to whom you obey. We are servants to whom we obey. Verse 8, it says, "Draw near to Yahweh and he will draw near to you." Draw near through studying, following what our great teacher has given us. Read the books of Yisrael. Study the literature coming out. If we were to do that, and it's a challenge to keep up with all of the things pastors bringing out in these last days, just to keep up with the publications and the literature. We truly, you never have time to watch a movie. You never have time to go run around with this world. If you're keeping up on these things, reading them once is not enough. Study, search out the book of Yahweh, we're commanded. "Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded." This comes from following the teachings, following the instructions, so that we may have this knowledge to overcome all sin. To overcome all sin. Look over to Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 23. Proverbs chapter 23 in verse 17. It's not hard to look out at this world and to think, man, I would sure like to have life a lot easier. But then you go out and you partake of that life and you find out the hell that it brings. You find out it's not as easy as you thought it was. In 23:17, we're warned, do not allow your mind to envy sinners. If you're doing that, sin is crouching at your door. We can't do that. But always be zealous for the reverence, the respect, to go and ask what is it I must do and to do everything we're told to do. Always be zealous to do that. Look over to chapter 24 and verse 1. Do not be envious of evil men, nor desire to be among them. No, come out from amongst them. Stay away from them. For their minds only study destruction. Yes, they watch their movies, they play their video games. They drink till they drop. And then they think their hangover is done when they wake up, but the STD stays with them for the rest of their life. The hangover never really stops. The nightmare never really ends. And in the end, they're begging for death to help end the pain and the misery they're suffering at that time. For their minds only study destruction and their lips only speak of causing trouble. Verse 3, it says, through wisdom, the house of Yahweh is built. It was built, it was established by the one sent. In 1983, it was recognized. 21 years after he and his brother in 1962 started revealing the son of perdition. Pastors brought that many times. Revealing the son of perdition, this other system, this pollution, the cause of this disease, this teaching of another system. But notice verse 4. And by knowledge, its rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. Look around you in the sanctuary right now. That is the pleasant and precious riches that has been given to our great teacher in these last days. That is us. That is us. For my closing scripture, please turn over to Yeketskia. Yeketskia, chapter 18 and verse 31. It says, cast away from you all transgressions in which you have transgressed, and prepare yourselves a new heart and a new spirit, a new character. Get ready to keep this agreement. Ask what you may do, and we're going to change. I'm going to help you change. And together, all of us as a body, we're going to help each other. So we'll get this new character, this new spirit. Notice what it says after that. For why should you die? Why should you die, O house of Israel? For I have no pleasure in the death of him who dies, says Father Yahweh. Therefore, turn and live. That is the command that we're given in these last days, to turn and live. And I want to show you something very quickly. You seen the young men this morning? I want to show you a training program taking place with other men, going through the same training. This is what our children should be doing. Not watching TV. Not playing video games. They should be learning to speak. Learning to speak. And at this time, if everyone will please stand, I would like to turn the services over to the great Kahan Benjamin Krause Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, saints of Yahweh. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. You may be seated. Beautiful Sabbath day. And we're going to open up file 62. 1962. You can write that down because that's what we're going to be talking about today. And I'm going to tell you right now, when Pastor gave me this assignment a few weeks ago, I was not even... It was dear to me because I was born in 1962, and so it was easy for me to remember, kind of like my co-op number was 96, so that was easy for me to do. But the things that were revealed is just incredible, and, you know, I don't want to steal the thunder later, I just want to tell you, what you're about to see is a slideshow, okay? You're gonna see a lot of visual. So please have your pencils, pens, your paper, your books of Yahweh out. And I really want you to thoroughly enjoy the knowledge that Yahweh is bringing forth in these last days to prove once and for all who the witness is, who the two witnesses are, who, you know, it was enough that we had Yahweh's word. But once you see what Yahweh's revealing now, you would have to be a fool not to believe all that the prophets have spoken about who Zerubbabel is and the one who's opposing Babylon in these last days. Now, if we could begin the slideshow. Now, we got to start this story. It may be a little hard to see some of the slides, but hopefully we'll get better as we go along. In order to speak about 1962, we got to start in 1961. Because in 1961, Pastor Israel Hawkins and his brother Jacob were living in a little town about 35 miles east of here called Cross Plains, Texas. And Pastor told me what I could gather from him, that he owned a couple laundromats there, and also in Rising Star, which is about 12 miles further east from Cross Plains on Highway 36, which right out here everybody's pretty familiar with. Now, also 1961, you got to go back to 1961. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I'm jumping ahead, but 1961, let's look at the definition of 1961, if you could put that slide up. 1961 is, hey-ya, in the Hebrew, and it's from 1933. Keep that one in your mind, okay? It's from Strong's 1933, which we'll talk about in a minute. And it means, amongst other things, to come about, come to pass, to come about, to arise. And again, it's from 1933, and we're going to look at that slide next. Could you play the next slide? Strong's number 1933 is, of course, it says from 1961, and it means to breathe, to be in the sense of existence, to be, become, exist, to be in existence. Well, in 1933, Pastor Israel Hawkins was in existence. He wasn't even in his mother's womb in 1933. Okay, he was born the next year in August of 1934. Now, 1933, how does this tie in to 1934? Let's play the next slide. Okay, this is Strong's 1934, and if you can see at the top, it says corresponding to 1933. It's the same word exactly, and it means to exist, become, behold, came to pass, judge, labor, as in work. Okay? And keep those words in mind. Write those down. Exist, behold, judge, become, come to pass, came to pass. Can you play the next slide, please? And we're reading from Zechariah 6, 11, and 12. Take the silver and gold and make crowns and set them upon the head of Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, the high priest. Speak to him and say, this is what Yahweh of hosts says. Behold the man whose name is the branch, for he will branch out from his place and he will build the house of Yahweh. Now, first of all, I want to point out that the judge that you just read about in that definition of 1934 is Yahshua standing there. You can see sitting there in that picture in that nebula, the horse head nebula. There's the judge of the house of Yahweh beholding the branch, Yisrael Hawkins. Okay? Now, that word, he will build the house of Yahweh, the word build, it's word number 1129, and it's the word benai, as one of our great Kohans, he's a builder. I guess that's where he got his name. It means to establish a family, to rebuild. Okay? Keep that in mind. Can we look at the next slide, please? 1933. What was taking place in 1933? Well, let's see. Everybody knows that the Holocaust was fixing to go into full swing. 1933 says, on January 30th, 1933, President Paul von Hindenburg appointed Hitler as Chancellor of Germany in 1933. Now, Hitler did not take full control, but Hitler was Chancellor and Hindenburg was President at that time of Germany. But lo and behold, in 1934, if you notice on the screen, on August 2nd, 1934, 26 days before Israel Hawkins was born, President Hindenburg died, and Hitler combined the offices of the Reich Chancellor and President, declaring himself to be the Führer. or the Reichsführer, meaning the leader of the Reich. The leader, Führer, means leader or to be led in German. Now, isn't that amazing, right? Now, why do you think Hitler came into power at that time? Well, if you've read the book, Can We Avoid the Next Holocaust, as we should read, we can see that there was only two people in mind at that time. Who do you think Satan was trying to destroy that was born at that time? Yes, Yisrael Abel Hawkins. But as you're going to learn, you're going to learn in a big way today, Yahweh is watching after Yisrael Hawkins and all of you here and all that have not even come yet. He is protecting you. And let me go on because I got a lengthy show here. Let's go to the next slide and let's look at the Hebrew interlinear, the Hebrew interlinear Bible, which has, you know, it has, they call it interlinear because it shows like the English, it shows the Hebrew, and it shows together line upon line, and it gives you the word numbers. And I want to read this to you. This is Isaiah 2, very familiar scripture. It says, "It shall come to pass." Notice the word above, the letter, the number above it, 1961. Okay? "It shall come to pass in the last days that established shall be that mountain of the house of the Lord," it says here, "as the chief of the mountains, and shall be exalted above the hills, and shall flow unto all nations." Okay? But that word 1961 is used there in "come to pass." Okay? Now, let's look at the next slide. And this is Micaiah 4, verse 1, which, remember, reiterates what Isaiah said in Isaiah 2, 1 and 2. But let's read it here as well. It says, "But in the last days, it shall come to pass," and if you notice the circled number there, 1961, "that the mountain of the house of Yahweh shall be established." There's that word "shall be," that's 1961 again, okay? "In the top of the mountains, and it shall be exalted above the hills, and the people shall flow unto it." Now, let's also look at the next slide. Remember, we're talking about 1961, 33, 34. This is Exodus 3:14. And why don't we all turn there real quick so we can read this together. Exodus 3:14. I'll give you a page number in just a moment. Exodus 3:14, found on page 46. And let's read the text in verse 14. It says, "Then Yahweh said to Moshe, I am who I am. And he said, this is what you are to say to the children of Israel. Yahweh has sent me to you." Now look at the text here in the interlinear again. And it notice where it says, "I am who I am." What word number is that? 1961. 1961. Identifying, okay, that Yahweh was in existence. Pastor came into existence. And the work, Yahweh was with the witness. Okay? And I'm going to prove that to you in a big way here pretty quick. But the same word 1961 is used there where it says, "I am who I am." Remember, "I am" means existence, to come into existence. Remember, Yahweh means self-existent, okay? Okay, now, can we go to the next slide? Now, this is from the 14th book of Israel, chapter 14, of course, right? 14, 14. If you'd be amazed at all the 14s that are in this thing here, and 28s, and so on and so forth, and 7s. You're going to see that here in a bit. Now, the 14th book of Yahweh, chapter 14, verse 2 says, Pastor says, we've got some great things. We're in the last part of the last prophesied present generation. The press release, this shows a great interest in the house of Yahweh, Yisrael Hawkins. What we did, they took our website, Yisrael Hawkins changes his website. That was a press release that was put out. I didn't think this would get much, but this week it shows what his life is really about and has been about. Now, they showed 40 years of Israel Hawkins' life. It was actually 52 years. Now, he said this in 2014 because he was alluding to 1962. If you want to get that in your mind, it's prophesied. But 52 years ago, J.G. Hawkins and Bill Hawkins opened the first broadcast in Eastland, Texas, Praise Yahweh. Can we go to the next slide? Continuing on in that same chapter, in the next verse, he says, we got fruits from that broadcast. In fact, when we built the sanctuary in Abilene on T&P Lane, people came there who had heard that first show from J.G. Hawkins and Bill Hawkins. It was a question and answer show. J.G. would ask the questions, and Bill Hawkins would answer the question. Would ask the questions, and Bill Hawkins would answer the questions. Opposing Babylon. That was the first start of the opposing of Babylon, Praise Yahweh. And in 1961, Pastor told me that him and his brother J.G., they were preaching, but the actual broadcast of the question and answer show did not take place until 1962, okay? Can we go to the next slide, please? Zerubbabel means he who opposes Babylon. Now look at the nebula there. We've gone over this before, and we showed how Pastor and Yahshua are facing one direction, and that Roman soldier up there at the top and all his cohorts that work with the Catholic Church, the Babylonian system, are facing another direction. That's showing the opposing of Babylon, the opposition, and showing who is the one who is opposing Babylon in these last days. Zechariah 4:7 says, who are you, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel, you will become a plain. Speaking of that Babylonian kingdom that right now is crumbling before your very eyes. Can we go to the next slide? 1962, Second Vatican Council. Now, let me give you a little history here. 1929 was when the Vatican was given power again. In the 1800s, I believe 1870 or so, the Pope was put on what they call house arrest or self-imposed house arrest. The Catholic Church lost power for a time. And we're going to read about that here in a second. But the Second Vatican Council was held. I'm going to read the underlined portion. It started on 11th October 1962. And you can compare this council to something like the Council of Nicaea, where they all get together, all the bishops from all over, and they all make doctrine at these councils that goes forth into the whole world, the Catholic world. Well, this council started on 11 October 1962, and it didn't close for 3 years. Actually, in 1965 is when it ended. But now notice very carefully what this council was. The subjects of this council were. The council became known for its renewal of Catholic doctrine in the modern timeline and perspective. In other words, the Vatican received power again in 1929, but they weren't opened up to the world. In other words, they weren't really going out there and really pushing it at that time. They remained in their secret chambers. Remember the Pharisees, Sadducees, Essenes, and Herodians? The Pharisees, the separatists, they were still separatists, and they didn't really stand up and start putting out what the Catholic people needed to do. Now it says, the council, such as the renewal of consecrated life, here's what they talked about in the council. It says, several institutional changes resulted from the council, such as the renewal of consecrated life with a revised charism, and eucunimical efforts toward dialogue with other religions. That means, eucunimical means they wanted to start calling all their daughters back into the church. That's what eucunimical means. They wanted to bring everyone back into the fold again. Also, what they talked about was the notion that the Catholic Church alone brings salvation to mankind, that only through the Catholic faith could you receive salvation? There's no other way. That was what they were pushing forward in Vatican II. That's what came from it. Okay, now, the First Vatican Council, if you can change slides. The First Vatican Council was held June 29, 1868, after a period of planning and preparation that began on the 6th of December, 1864. It says the 20th Ecumenical Council of the Catholic Church, held 3 centuries after the Council of Trent, opened on the 8th of December, 1869, and adjourned on the 20th of October, 1870. It says, unlike the 5 earlier general councils held in Rome, which met in the Lateran Basilica and are known as Lateran Councils, this one met in the Vatican Basilica, hence its name. That's why it was called the First Vatican Council. And at that council, what they came up with was how the popes are infallible. You know, that they don't make whatever they say when they're sitting on their throne with their little crown on their head or tiara or whatever they call it. Whatever they say, that goes. You can't change it. Okay, that's papal infallibility. Okay, now notice at the bottom on that screen there it says, consequently, on September 20th, 1870, the Kingdom of Italy captured Rome and annexed it. And this is what the great God David had brought out earlier. 1 month later, on 20 October 1870, Pope Pius IX suspended the council indefinitely. It was never reconvened. Until when? 1962, when the Second Vatican Council came forward. Isn't that amazing? Now, what would be the odds of that? And now remember, 2 were preaching in 1962. 2 stood up. The Catholic Church was saying salvation only comes from the Catholic Church. But there was another man that was preaching that no, salvation only comes through one. It don't come through the Catholic Church. Now, let's go over to the next slide, please. Get ready, because it's fixing to get really exciting. I haven't even touched on anything yet. But I'm hoping you're keeping up with the notes. Please don't give up. Please keep writing your notes, because this is very important to get these dates and these events. Now, from the 14th book of Israel, chapter 14 again, verse 66. Pastor says, before the enemy came up with her plot, Yahweh had already planned to take care of that plot thousands of years, millions of years in advance. You can't beat such knowledge. You can't fight wisdom like that. Yahweh can tell you what's going to go on in 1962. He can put it, have his prophets write about it thousands of years before that. 1962. And it comes to pass. In the last days, speaking of the last generation, I will establish my house. What do you think you're sitting in right now? Praise Yahweh. Okay, now let me tell you, that word also meant establish. I don't know if I might have wrote it in some other notes, but that 1934 meant establish as well. Actually, I think you saw it in the interlinear, but anyway. At this time, now listen, I'm about to play a video, and it's about 10 minutes, so I hope you don't fall asleep. No, I guarantee you will not fall asleep, okay? But now, here's what I want you to pay attention to. I want you to pay attention to the individual's name. Now, y'all remember the Cuban Missile Crisis, okay? All right. But there's some things that have been revealed since even some of us thought what we knew about the missile crisis just in the last week or two, okay? This is truly amazing, but I want you to take note of the man's name who was the third person. There's 3 people that could have pushed that button, and they all 3 had to agree. But one man said, I'm not going to do it. I want you to look at his name, and I want you to notice the boat, the submarine that he was commanding, or he was commanding, actually, I think the whole fleet, but the one that he was on in particular. And then the second part of the video, listen very closely how Pope John the 23rd had to do with the Cuban Missile Crisis. The Cuban Missile Crisis, if you don't know about the Cuban Missile Crisis, you could always read up on it, but they call it the 13 days of October, but really it was 14 days. The U-2 plane that spotted the missiles in Cuba was on October 14th. they sent message to the U.S. that there are missiles on that island, and it didn't end until October 28th. 14 days. See, they can't even count that. They can't count the three, so how could they count the 14, right? But did you all catch the name of the captain or of the fleet? Vasily Arkhipov. Can you show the next slide, please? This is from the Guardian newspaper, and it says, "Thank you, Vasily Arkhipov, the man who stopped nuclear war." Okay? Now, we heard, hasn't this occurred before in 2007 as well? Didn't Pastor tell us about that one man, you know, that said, no, we're not going to do this? So you can see how Yahweh has been holding this thing back and protecting this last work. Now, Arkhipov, I looked everywhere for the etymology of that name, and I could not find anything, even in Russian etymology, where that word came from. But just notice the first three letters of his name, Ark, right? Now, he was a submariner. That means he was a submarine. He was living on a submarine, or he worked on submarines. And it was interesting, too, that he was on B-59. There was three other subs, but none of those other subs even came close to using their weapons. Only B-59, okay? That's very, very important to remember. One of the other subs was B-4, B-36, and B-130. And B-130 is very interesting, too, because it means Edom and it means red. And the Soviets were always known as Reds. In fact, the word Russian, Rus, means red, okay? Now, but also last night, B-130, last night the Sabbath began on 1:30, did it not? 1:30, okay? Now, where am I going? Let's look at I don't want to jump ahead. Sometimes I mess things up. Okay, go ahead and go to the next slide. Remember, he was on sub B-59. So I went to the Hebrew alphabet, and if you'll notice, bet or beit is the second. It's not the second letter of the Hebrew alphabet. It's actually the first, but it's alpha. You have alpha and then bet or beit. That's where the term alphabet came from, as a matter of fact. Okay, but beit. Notice what beit means. B-E-T-H. And this is in Psalm 119. If you look in Psalm 119. You'll see these letters and the scriptures below them. But this one says, this word, well, let me read the whole thing. The word means house in the sense of a building, but also household, wife, and children. The word also serves to mean the house of Yahweh. Now, the house of Yahweh, B, okay? The letter B, that bet. That beit makes the b sound. That's where the b is in the Hebrew. Now, let's go to the next slide. Remember, he was on submarine 59, B-59. Well, what does 59 mean? Able. Yes, Abel. Okay, let me continue. Abel. So, and it means a meadow, and it's from 58, a meadow. Okay, now, Abilene. Now, remember, Pastor was living in Cross Plains at the time. The house of Yahweh at Abilene hadn't been built yet. The house, the physical house, hadn't been built. Okay? The meeting place. Let's go to the next slide. Now, I don't know how many of you know this, but you're going to know it now. And I know this has been brought years ago. There's somebody that talked about the missiles that used to be here in Clyde or in Abilene during the missile crisis. I'm going to read this to you. This is about the Atlas missile from the Military Standard, Atlas missile at Dyess Air Force Base, Texas. It says, originally, Abilene Army Field It was called Abilene Army Field. This World War II vintage fighter pilot training facility was turned over to the city of Abilene at the end of the war. Talking about World War I, or II, I'm sorry. After an eight-year absence, the military returned in 1953 when SAC, that's the Strategic Air Command, assumed command of the newly dedicated Abilene Air Force Base. Redesignated Dyess Air Force Base in 1956, the facility hosted SAC bombers and supporting aircraft. As construction continued, the Air Force activated the 578th Strategic Missile Squadron on July 1, 1961. 1961. 1961. My emphasis added. Becoming operational in 1962. The 578th and its 12 missiles were all placed on alert status during the Cuban Missile Crisis. The locations of the 12 lift launchers were Abilene, Albany, Clyde, Denton, County, Oakland, Lawn, Bradshaw, Winters, Shep, Nolan, Anson, and Corinth. Can I have the next slide, please? So these missiles were ringed around Abilene. This is an Atlas missile named after one of their gods. You can look it up later. I don't have time for it. But that was the Atlas missile, and by the way, held a very, very big punch of about 100 times the force of the Hiroshima Nagasaki weapons. Okay, now you can see just how much damage this could have done and how this world would have been totally destroyed. These were the missiles that were around the Abilene area, and one right here in Clyde. Go to the next slide, please. And, you know, I mean, who else would be watching over these missiles but the 96th Test Wing? It says the 96th Test Wing was transferred to Dyess Air Force Base on 8 September 57. During the period from 1959 to 1963, the 96th Test Wing was commanded by Colonel Burton Andrus. You can see that eagle with a bomb in his mouth. Okay, now go to the next slide. Here's an amazing fact. The only places that they had these missiles, there was 12 sites throughout the United States. And the only place in Texas that was chosen to have these Atlas missiles was where else? Abilene. Can you imagine what would have taken place at that time had Vasily Arkhipov fired that nuclear torpedo, and all-out nuclear war was launched, would there be an Abilene? Would there be a Cross Plains? Would there be the two witnesses? No, there would not. Can you go to the next slide, please? Here is the map. You'll see the green dots going all around Abilene. Those were the sites that the missiles were put in. 12 locations. And as you can see, one was in Clyde. If you look on the map, you'll see Highway 36 going into Cross Plains. Remember, one of those submarines was called 36, wasn't it? B-36. That's where Pastor was located, right there off Highway 36. He said he lived just a couple blocks off the highway there. Now, that's only about 36 miles away from here. Can you imagine what would have taken place to the witness? But do you think that Yahweh would allow this to take place? No way! No way, Jose, as they say where I'm from. Okay, now, so let me make sure I'm not missing anything here. But 12 of these Atlas missiles surrounding Abilene, the only place in Texas. I mean, they could have put that thing in Houston or Dallas or, you know, anywhere. They could have put it out in the prairies up in Lubbock or something. But no, they put it right there, Abilene, in the targets. That is just amazing. Go to the next slide, please. Now, if you go down, this slide here shows the actual silo from an overhead view in Clyde, Texas. The actual missile silo that Atlas missile was. Remember, a silo goes into the ground. It's way down there in the ground. But during the Cuban Missile Crisis, they were put on DEFCON 2 status, And those bombs were lifted out of the silos, ready to launch. DEFCON 2, there's only one more step to nuclear war. It's called DEFCON 1. It's the only time in history that the DEFCON alert was raised that high. Do you understand that? That's the only time it's ever been done. 1962. At the time that the witness stood up opposing Babylon and the Vatican stood up and said, no, we're the way to salvation. What would be the odds of this? It's like, you know, isn't any wonder Yahshua said, you're a fool, man. You're a fool and slow of heart, man, to believe what the prophets have spoken. Now, this, can you put that slide back up, that Atlas commemorative? Oh, the next slide, I'm sorry. If you go out here on County Road 604 or Farm Road 604, you'll see this sign. As a matter of fact, every time I drive here, if I go up 604, I see that Atlas ICBM Highway. In fact, it was the Texas legislature decided to designate it that in memory of their missile silo that they had there. And it says, it talks about this this commemoration, and it says the most convenient of these is the town of Clyde, just south of I-20. Highway 604 was officially given its designation in 2001 by a unanimous vote of the Texas State Senate. Okay, now let's go to the next slide, please. Now, the number 1962, we haven't looked at this yet, and it's hey-ya, hey-ya, right? What would be the odds of that? You know? Okay, so it means calamity. 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 When I read that, I didn't know what I was about to read, but when I read that, I thought, Pastor gave a sermon on that. I think it was called Clouds of Calamity. Yeah, Clouds of Calamity. I better go find that. So let's go to the next slide. This is a letter that was written by Chairman Khrushchev to President Kennedy on October 26, 1962. And I'm only taking the part out that I want you to read. He says, "Dear Mr. President, we have always regarded war as a calamity and not as a game, nor as a means for the attainment of definite goals, nor all the more as a goal in itself. Our goals are clear, and the means to attain them is labor. War is our enemy and a calamity for all the peoples." Okay, these are his words. He used the word calamity twice. Now, could we go to the next slide, please? Now, this is from the first book of Israel. The time of this series was called The Time of the End, number one. And the series, the title of the sermon was called The Clouds of Calamity. And it was given on 5-10-03. And Pastor in this is quoting Daniel 7:13. Remember the purple 7:13. And Pastor says, this is coming. This is going to come. This destruction is going to come. I saw in the night vision. Now he's quoting from Daniel 7:13. I saw in the night vision, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds. These clouds, Pastor says, mean season of or time. Season of or time. A 3.5-year time period, in other words, Pastor said. This season of calamity. This season of calamity. This season of calamity. That is when Yahshua is going to come, but not before. That is what Matthew 24:29 says also, with the clouds of calamity of heaven, and they came to him. That is Yahweh, the Ancient of Days, and they were brought together before him, and there was given him, along with you, brethren, this kingdom, this ruling authority. But it's going to be after the destruction that is determined will take place. This calamity that's been determined. Was that calamity determined in 1962? Was it time yet? No, it wasn't. Many, many prophecies hadn't even been fulfilled at that time, had they? So do you think Yahweh was going to allow them to destroy the world? No, Yahweh held it back. You know, you notice Pope John Paul the 23rd was writing a letter to Khrushchev, and the music in the background was, ooh, and you know, all the people's faces, oh, universal peace, you know, the Pope, I'm so glad he wrote that letter, he saved us all. It made me just want to cry up there watching that. He didn't do anything to stop anything. You know who stopped it? You just saw who stopped it. Yahweh stopped it through a man named Vasil Arkhipov on B-59, named for Abel, the house of Abel, the house of Yahweh at Abel, right? Yes, give Yahweh a hand. And Yahshua. Okay, now, not done yet. Okay, so can I have the next slide, please? This is from the 14th book, chapter 14, where else? Verse 48, and this is from Isaiah 43:2. Yahweh says, when you pass, speaking to Israel, the witness Israel and Jacob, when you pass through the waters, if you're familiar with the translation or rendering from words from the scriptures and letting the scriptures interpret the scriptures, you'll know that this many waters that we're passing through is peoples, multitudes, nations, and tongues. So Yahweh says in Isaiah 43:2, when you pass through the waters, can I have my next slide? Verse 49. Now, he's speaking to the two witnesses here, and he's saying, when you pass through the waters, the people, multitudes, nations, and tongues, I will be with you. And through the rivers, they will not overflow you. When you walk through the fire, you will not be burned, nor will the flame kindle upon you. Nor will the flame kindle upon you. Nor will the flame, the nuclear flame, kindle upon you. Three times for emphasis for you. Four times if you want me to do it. Now it says, you see the protection he's saying that he's got to set up, that he's already set up in advance to take care of this work. And the people who do the work. When Yahweh saved Yisrael, Abel Hawkins, and the witness Jacob, was he just saving them? No. He was saving all of us. I was born a week after the Cuban Missile Crisis. 1 week later, there's another great deacon sitting out here. I'm from Alaska. He's from Nebraska. And he's the one that brought to my attention the man who saved the world. And we were born just hours apart in 1962. Just hours apart. And I know some others that were born in 1962, but it doesn't matter when you were born. They were going to annihilate the world. If Yahweh had to hold it back, none of us would be here right now. Can you go to the next slide, please? Yes, you can give Yahweh a hand. Okay, now this is from the 13th book of Israel, part 2, page 176, verse 50. It says, well, in the last days, Yahweh says, I'm going to establish my house. Do you know how much trouble it took to establish the house of Yahweh? Laying the foundation. And then it says in another place, it's going to be done by someone who opposes Babylon. They translated it Zerubbabel, but it means he who opposes Babylon. He's going to establish it. Establish the house of Yahweh, not just any time or sometime, but in the last days. As Yahshua said, the last generation, 1934, the nuclear bomb, patent by Leo Szilard, 1934. I remember even on Food Inc., we watched Food Inc., and it talked about how the food started going downhill in the 1930s because McDonald's came into existence and they wanted all those big fat cows all to look and taste the same. And I mean, everything started going downhill in 1934. What would be the odds of this? The very year that our pastor was born, the last generation began. It says, we're in that time period. You can see the house of Yahweh established at this time, right? Praise Yahweh. Can you go to the next slide? And this is from the October-November 2014 Prophetic Word magazine on page 20. It says, read Micaiah 4, 1 through 3. This prophecy was fulfilled in 1983 in the very place and age prophesied. This prophecy, that's when the House of Yahweh was fully established and recognized by the U.S. government in 1983, as the great Kohan Iliah just said, 21 years after 1962. 777, right? This prophecy was made long before the printing presses or computers that came along with the increase in knowledge, as did the nuclear bomb. And remember, not just the increase of knowledge of mankind, the computers, you know, and all these other things, but the increase in spiritual knowledge also. And it came, you know, the scriptures were given back to the people, but they needed the one to teach. They needed the one to teach salvation, and it wasn't in Rome. It was not the Vatican to teach salvation. It had to be Israel Hawkins and the other witness. Okay? This is prophesied. It says, all these things came into existence in this last generation so that the last day's work of Yahweh could take place. The house of Yahweh could be established, and the two witnesses trained and inspired to do their work of taking Yahweh's message to all nations. The house of Yahweh in this last generation, it began in 1934. Pastor has pounded this. He's pounded it and pounded it. And you have proof. This last generation is another fulfilled prophecy that Yahweh's prophets spoke of for this present prophesied generation. It is now taking the message of the kingdom of Yahweh to every nation on earth. Can we have the next slide, please? Turn over to Zechariah 4:9, please. Zechariah 4:9. I'll give you a page number as soon as I get it. It's on page 718. And let's read this. It says, the hands of Zerubbabel, or the hands of the one who opposes Babylon, have laid the foundation of this house, and his hands will also finish it. Do you believe that? You know, and you will know that Yahweh of hosts has sent me to you. I mean, look at all that Yahweh has done to protect this house. And you don't think he's going to finish it? Okay. Now, in 1983, the House of Yahweh was fully established and recognized by the U.S. government. Pastor was 49 years old then. Seven sevens. Seven times seven. He was born in 1934. And it's amazing. If you can go to the next slide. The sequence of sevens in the time, or times in the life of Israel Hawkins. From 1934 to 1962, Pastor was 28 years old in 1962. Seven times four. And he began the question and answer show in Eastland with his brother Jacob, the other witness. And of course, we know that Pastor represents the moon, right? And a moon cycle is 28 days. I don't have time right now to get into these numbers, but I'm pretty sure at some point something will be brought on it. But I can tell you that it's simply amazing that this information about these numbers with Pastor. Now, he was 28 years old in 1962. In 1969, 7 years later, is when Jacob went to Israel for 7 years. 1983, the house of Yahweh is fully established 21 years, or seven times three, after Israel Hawkins started opposing Babylon in 1962. And then, 28 years later, seven times four again, Pastor sees a donkey cloud in the sky, which begins the signs from heaven spoken of in Luke 21:11, 28 years after the house of Yahweh was established, or fully established. Now, I want to give you some hope. You should already have hope. I mean, come on, man. I mean, this is like, it's incredible. You know, it really makes me cry when I read all this stuff. It was just like, wow, Yahweh went to all this for all of us to protect the house of Yahweh. It wasn't just the two witnesses. You know, the house is a family. The family, everywhere, wherever you are that are tuned in right now, you are the family of Yahweh. And Yahweh went to these great lengths to save your life. So he could establish this last day's work, bring us to perfection, and we can clean this earth up, and we can go on in the universe and teach them the peaceful solution as well and bring peace to the whole entire universe together as a family, as a unit. Now, Pastor is now in his 12th seven-year period. He's in his 12th seven-year time in his life. And 12, of course, means perfection of government. Can you go to the next slide? I really hate to bring this one up, but can you turn to Luke 24, 25, please? Even if you know what it is already, you're a fool if you wouldn't turn to it thinking, oh, I've already read that. Or no, that says. I love it when Pastor writes in his newsletters, you know, first yocking on 3-4 is like every other sentence or so. You know, and the carnal mind's like, well, skip over that. I already read that. No, you're a fool if you don't read every word of every newsletter and every prophetic word and every book of Israel and everything that's been put out in the house of Yahweh. It is so awesome. It's like the great Deacon David said, you know, how much do we pass up, man? We're passing things up. We're passing all this wonderful, beautiful knowledge that Yahweh gave us. We're passing it up. Not all of us. But we're passing it up. What we want, what Pastor wants is everyone, please, you know, take every moment that you have, when you're not working, of course, to read and study. Luke 24, 25, for my final scripture. Yahshua said to them, O fools and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. You know, none of us needed signs in the clouds and I know I didn't. I didn't need to see signs or I didn't need to see. I already knew Yahweh's word was true. And it was because of the greatest teacher in the world that taught us. So in his teaching us, continues to teach us and guide us so thoroughly in Yahweh's word. And I marvel at the young children here that are learning and growing in Yahweh's house. And I'm telling you, they could just put any preacher out there to shame just in one sentence out of their mouth. Brothers and sisters, it's been an honor to speak to you today. Take these words to heart, you know, and you know, maybe you can get the DVD and watch it over and over, whatever you got to do. But it's been a blessing to talk to you. Stay strong in Yahweh's work. Yahweh's very pleased with his house in these last days. And at this time, if you'd all please stand, I have the great privilege to turn it over to the next priest for closing prayer.